We've actually surveyed members of the European Parliament recently. This is a thing we've done several times in the past. This is our fourth survey. We've been doing them since 2020. And it's quite interesting there. I mean, I can talk you through some of the individual results on topics you're interested in. But one thing that really stood out for me, looking at our survey results as a whole, is that MEPs seem to be dividing more explicitly into two camps, the pro-novel nicotine and the anti-novel nicotine. In the past, we had a lot of people who, on a lot of questions, would simply say, I don't know, I have no view, I'm not well informed enough about this. This year, we tend to have many, many fewer don't knows. People are forming their opinions and they're, you know, they're going for one group or another. We don't track these by individual member states. So, you know, I can't in this conversation pull that down to what member state positions will be, though I think we could possibly guess at some of them. But it does seem to underline the prospect that there will be quite a big conflict or heated debate, to put it more politely, about how to approach taxation first and then regulation of these products in general.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Vaping Unplugged podcast. Everything you need to know about vaping and tobacco harm reduction.
Hello and welcome back to Vaping Unplugged, the World Vapers Alliance podcast. Today we have an interesting episode. I'm talking to Barnaby Page from eSig Intelligence. He's a former reporter and is now covering all aspects of harm reduction and vaping. And they did a very interesting project. They have a survey of members of parliament running already. The fourth edition just came out, and we talk about all the results, how informed members of parliament are. Those are the people who make the decisions about our future. So it's quite interesting to know how informed they are about harm reduction. And since we are recording during COP11 week, we will also talk about COP. So enjoy the episode and vape on. Hello, Barnaby. Welcome back to Vaping Unplugged. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great and great to be here again. Obviously quite an important week for novel nicotine products coming just at the end of COP11 that we're talking. And also looking ahead to what I guess is likely to be quite a significant year for these products, and particularly in Europe.
Definitely. Yes, we are recording Thursday evening, November 20. So it's day four of COP11, even though I invited you to talk about some EU stuff you did and some interesting work. I would suggest we start a little bit with COP, since it's happening at the moment. Do you already have any general thoughts about it? Any surprises, any trends you have spotted after the first 3 to 4 days?
Well, I do, but in a sense, I mean, funnily enough, I was writing about the COP just this afternoon, or about COP and the WHO in general. And in a sense, my point would be that it might be a bit of a mistake to look for trends, that, you know, the WHO position, and particularly the position of COP, by, you know, not necessarily the position of every individual member state, tends to be pretty unchanging. It's very, very skeptical about novel nicotine products. You know, it sees them as part of a tobacco problem rather than part of the solution, et cetera, et cetera. All these things we know. So I don't think anybody should go into a COP season expecting some, you know, sudden dramatic change. It's not going to get very positive. It couldn't actually get much more negative. That also raises an interesting question. You know, does COP, a single COP event in itself, really have much impact on regulation and policy? And I would argue it actually doesn't. All it does probably is reinforces views that were already held, because there's generally little change. So no country is likely to radically change its policies tomorrow because of what was said at COP this week. Having said that, I think there were some interesting developments on a small scale. You pointed out in our chat just now that a few more lower and middle income countries than one might have expected had expressed a desire for a bit more openness in discussion of tobacco and nicotine issues. I also noted that the WHO itself, in a position statement it made shortly before the beginning of COP, noted, I think for the first time, a point about variations in novel nicotine products, variations in the way they're used. And his conclusion was that we shouldn't generalize about the risks of these. This seemed to me to be opening a very small door toward perhaps a slightly more open-minded approach to these products. Now, I think, I don't think anybody should expect the WHO to do a major about turn in terms of its position. I think, there are certain things, its preoccupation with Article 5.3, perhaps historically justified. Nevertheless, I think will prevent it long term from, engaging with these products and with this industry very much at all. But insofar as there was any change in this COP at all, I think it may have been a very, very marginal shift in a positive direction for the, for the reduced risk movement, as it were.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I was crazy enough to listen to all 104 statements during the opening day, since that's the only time at COP where we as outsiders, consumers, can even listen in and hear what is said inside the COP halls. And yeah, I would say the same. There were a couple of very pro and outspoken harm reduction statements, but overall there were many more views and voices, especially from lower and middle income countries, who demanded more inclusion in the decision making. So I have a feeling that a lot of delegations and countries are a bit annoyed with the secretariat, that they feel like being steamrolled a bit and overlooked. And I think maybe the slightly more openness to different opinions might be a result of that, because the secretariat feels the pressure a bit more. I mean, I think they had pressure from the outside always, especially from all these consumer groups and public health experts. But now inside, the echo chamber starts to cracking a little bit. And I think that can only be positive. We will see what the final outcomes are and what the decisions will be. But one interesting aspect happened today, and I think this is a slightly bridge to the EU topic already. We know that the EU needs to go in there with a common position, and they only were able to agree on a common position last Friday, which was not to support any bans. And today it got leaked that apparently Denmark and the EU Commission are pushing for bans nevertheless, which is quite odd, and I'm not sure yet how it will land with other member states. What do you think about that? Do they just ignore what they agreed on a week ago, or not even a week ago? Or is this just, the typical positioning and showing we tried everything to do, but we can't do it?
I think there's probably a bit of truth to the latter, but I think it is an interesting development. And I think the difficulty the EU had in coming to a common position in advance of this COP is really significant. Now, I don't think it's particularly significant in terms of the COP itself, but in terms of, WHO. And as I've said, I think, in fact, the significance of WHO policy is probably overrated anyway. But I think it's significant in what is going to happen in Europe going ahead. Because it seems to imply that there are decidedly strong divisions between member states, and therefore implicitly among, individual parliamentarians, and between the parliament and the commission, and so on and so forth, about how to treat novel nicotine products. Now, of course, we have the taxation directive, the tobacco taxation directive, coming up, which is very likely to introduce a new tax regime for these novel products. We also have, at a less determinate point in the future, very likely a new version of the Tobacco Products Directive. So there's quite a lot likely to be happening in Europe in the next year or two in terms of EU-wide regulation. Inevitably, there will have to be some agreement reached in the end. It seems quite likely that, as in the past, what we will get is a fairly strong, maybe not quite prohibitionist, but tight regulation approach from the Commission, which is then watered down somewhat by the Parliament. But as you say, the difficulty the EU had in coming to a common position at all pre-COP suggests there will be some quite heated debates about this. And we've actually surveyed members of the European Parliament recently. This is a thing we've done several times in the past. This is our fourth survey. We've been doing them since 2020. And it's quite interesting there. I mean, I can talk you through some of the individual results on topics you're interested in. But one thing that really stood out for me looking at our survey results as a whole is that MEPs seem to be dividing more explicitly into two camps, the pro-novel nicotine and the anti-novel nicotine. In the past, we had a lot of people who, on a lot of questions, would simply say, I don't know, I have no view, I'm not well informed enough about this. This year, we tend to have many, many fewer don't knows. People are forming their opinions and they're, you know, they're going for one group or another. We don't track these by individual member states. So, you know, I can't in this conversation pull that down to what member state positions will be, though I think we could possibly guess at some of them. But it does seem to underline the prospect that there will be quite a big conflict or heated debate, to put it more politely, about how to approach taxation first and then regulation of these products in general.
Yeah, I would say the European Parliament is a bit of a strange mix up of opinions, probably when it comes to most policy decisions, the nationality is important. But I have a feeling, and when talking to MEPs, when it comes to tobacco harm reduction, it's more a political stance issue, less than a nationalistic stance. Did you ask for, or did you separate the answers between political parties as well, or is it a general overview?
We do sometimes look at that to an extent. The issue there is that, of course, the sample we have is relatively small, so I would be cautious of, you know, the number of parties, you know, and the breadth of political spectrum they occupy is quite wide. So I would be cautious of drawing a lot of conclusions from that. Two things I would note, though, about the composition of the parliament. One is this was the first time we did the survey since the last round of MEP elections. So there were a lot of new members of parliament. I think something, if I'm correct, I think something like 50% of MEPs were new. So that might well represent an influx of new opinions, whether positive or negative, into the parliament. Another thing we've noted, and this is a very consistent characteristic of all the MEP surveys we've conducted over the years, is that very, very broadly speaking, knowledge of products correlates with a positive point of view. I wouldn't say that 100%. There are those who are knowledgeable about the products and opposed to them. But generally, the more somebody knows, the more sympathetic they are to the claims of reduced risk of novel nicotine products. Now, where the cause and effect lies there is an open question. Are they sympathetic because they've learned about the products and see their product advantages, or have they gone out and learned about them because they were sympathetic to start with? That's much harder to say. And of course, it probably both happen in different cases. But I think, you know, one of the takeaways from that for the point of view of advocacy groups is that lobbying and informational activities, at least at European parliamentary level, probably really are valuable. They probably really do change minds, and they probably do really have the potential to affect policy.
Perhaps, yeah, and I mean, I would probably, obviously, from my point of view, it would be quite logic that if a politician looks into the issue a little bit, that he will find out very fast that the products are at least less harmful than smoking. And if you want to reduce harms, you should be having a more favorable view of them. Obviously, if that causation is really there or if it's only a correlation, we don't really know. But I think on the risk perception, you saw also a little bit of shifts, because I remember the first few times there were also a lot of, I don't know. How did that evolve over time? Is it the same that you see more shift towards the extremes?
We've seen the I don't knows on risk assessment reduced dramatically. I mean, if you look at 2021, 2022, I don't know was running around 25%. This year, it was down to 7%. The less harmful the smoking group increased slightly from the early 50s to 60%. But the as harmful as smoking, as or more harmful than smoking group, look at it that way, increased quite a bit. So, I mean, for example, in 2022, we had 19% of respondents saying that new nicotine products were either as harmful as smoking or more harmful. This year, we had 33%. So that's not quite doubling, but it's close to it.
The other side is lobbying quite successfully too, then.
Exactly, yeah. So there's more MEPs convinced of reduced risk. There's more MEPs definitely unconvinced by reduced risk. But nobody very much is sitting on the fence any longer.
And I mean, it sounds pretty bad, obviously. One-third thinks it's as harmful or more harmful. But compared to the general public, it's actually better and more informed. Because there are, even among smokers in most countries, you have 50% who think it's as harmful or more harmful. And I think you also ask for product categories, and there is still most people know that cigarettes are the main issue and the most risky products, right?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, there is pretty much, you know, universal consensus on that. Even when people are regarding reduced risk products themselves as quite risky. Another thing, though, you know, that I think is a cause for some concern is that there is an increasing belief among MEPs that novel nicotine products may lead to smoking. That's something we're seeing growing. In fact, again, we've seen that growing over the years. We've also seen the disagreement growing over the years, and the neutrals or the don't knows are shrinking. So again, you're seeing people, splitting into two camps there.
And I'm not sure if I remember that correctly, but isn't it that MEPs actually think mainly about nicotine pouches that they lead to smoking, which is quite odd to me.
It would be a strange interpretation of the reality, since nicotine, of all novel products, nicotine pouches are the least similar to smoking. I think, you know, set against that, you'd simply have to say it's the fact that nicotine pouches have currently or recently had, you know, a lot of media coverage. There's an extent to which nicotine pouches are not replacing vapes, but kind of joining vapes as the object of moral panic. And so that simply could be down to that.
It's the newest product for most.
Yes, exactly. It's a product that has appeared, you know, more or less from nowhere in most people's perception. You know, 2-3 years ago, it was extremely niche, and the average person who wasn't in a user or in this reduced risk world would have been completely unaware of nicotine pouches. And now they're everywhere. So it's a pretty sudden and dramatic thing that.
Yeah. And then considering that one of the big issues apart from the Tobacco Products Directive, you mentioned it already, will be the taxation, the Tobacco Excise Directive, so taxation of nicotine products. You also ask about the opinion of MEPs, what they think if cigarettes or vapes or other nicotine products should be taxed more or less. Do we have some hope there, or do they want to tax everything the same?
I think that, well, there's certainly moderate hope, I think, there. In 2025, it was actually an even split between the number who felt that it should be less tax and the number who felt it should be the same tax. And a tiny, tiny number, less than 10%, felt that novel products should actually be taxed higher than existing combustible products. The number who felt that novel product taxation should be less had actually gone up considerably. It had gone up from 19% to 46%, while the number who thought it should be the same as combustibles had gone down by a more or less corresponding amount. So oddly, at the same time as, you know, there's this perception on the one hand of novel products creating this on-ramp to smoking, there's actually a more sympathetic view toward a tax regime. And in fact, when it comes to commercial aspects of novel nicotine products, it's generally a pretty easygoing approach that MEPs are taking. Well over half of them are in favor of online sales being allowed. A small majority think that advertising, or fairly small majority, think that advertising rules should be the same as for combustibles. But again, hardly anybody thinks they should be more stringent. And nearly a majority, just under half, believe it or not, actually think that the rules on flavors for novel products should be less strict than they are for combustibles. Of course, the combustible rules on flavors are extremely strict, so less strict is maybe not that great. But given the, you know, the very bad press that flavors get, I thought that was quite interesting. So there seems to be, you know, some increasing concern about the products in theory. But again, it's maybe not translating into people wanting to take a very, very hardline policy position.
Yeah, and it could also be the typical politician's phenomenon that when you talk about an issue on a very high level, obviously they want to be the ones who do something about a problem. But when it gets to the nitty gritty of what exactly we should do, maybe then a little bit more pragmatism comes into play and actually thinking about the actual consequences. But we always criticize at WHO level that there is no thinking about negative effects of certain recommendation or policy effects. I think that is a bit better in the European Parliament. But if we would take a step back, and if you think about all the policy debates upcoming and negotiations, in the EU, we have basically the three bodies who will decide those things: the Commission, the European Parliament, and the Member States. Can you give us a quick overview of what you expect when it comes to the future of the tobacco regulation and nicotine regulation of each of these bodies, and where consumers should look at?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I mean, I think if we go on the basis of what's happened in the past, and of course things are not necessarily going to be identical, but you know, it's a good model to start with, it's quite likely that we will see a pretty stringent position from the member state, from the Commission. I'm getting tumbling over my European bodies, so let me start again. That we will see a pretty stringent position from the Commission, which the Parliament will then modify somewhat, make more liberal. The member states, I would expect to be pretty sharply divided, as they are anyway. So, you know, you have countries like the Netherlands, you know, recently having become a pretty extreme example, which have very, very strong anti-nicotine sentiments. Or you have other countries, you know, Spain would be an example where, you know, not exactly positive, but it's considerably less aggressively negative. So I would think you're going to see a sharp split in the member state positions, I would guess, you know, pretty much reflecting what we see playing out at the moment in their internal politics and regulation. You may well see as well individual variations from the member states on individual specific issues, for example, taxation, because they will have, you know, their own considerations about how an EU-wide tax framework would fit into their own individual national tax frameworks. That's not necessarily always even going to be a nicotine-specific issue, you know, and so to sort of talking about the public health angle might not, you know, make a lot of impact there. But I would guess that will be the general picture. You know, a strict commission, a more liberal parliament, and strongly divided member states. I would just add, though, going back to what we talked about, you know, and you made that really interesting point there about politicians being, you know, happy to sort of talk the talk, but a bit more cautious when it comes to proposing specific policy positions, is, of course, you know, these policy positions we're asking about are quite vague as well. So, for example, regulating vape flavors less than tobacco flavors could mean allowing strawberry vape and banning everything else, or it could mean allowing 1,000 vape flavors. You know, they both are less regulation than tobacco. So there's quite a, there is quite a lot of wiggle room in there, you know, for politicians to, you know, even if they're nominally sympathetic, you know, to actually make some sort of compromise with the more stringent antis, if you like.
But then overall, so because I'm looking already a little bit on the time, do you think there is hope and room for optimism when it comes to that, or do we have to expect the worst?
I do think there is hope and room for optimism. I mean, you know, I think we have several times in the past, you know, we've anticipated terrible regulation in one country or another, and it hasn't happened. I think there's, you know, there's certainly a sufficient volume of positive feeling as well as negative feeling, even just among the parliament itself, let alone consumers, that it can't be completely ignored. But I think, you know, perhaps most significantly, and again, you know, this is a point I know I've made frequently before, there appears to be this weird but actually kind of quite positive disconnect in the novel nicotine market, which is that you have certainly a regulatory climate that is getting tougher over the last couple of years. You know, it's not always getting dramatically tougher, but even in countries like the UK, you know, government positions are now a bit less sympathetic than they were. It's perhaps more sympathetic than most countries still, but it's not what it once was. So you have that kind of negative trend happening on the one side. You have all this terrible, terrible media coverage and public perceptions happening on the other side. And yet the market actually continues to thrive. You know, and I think, though I don't count myself as an advocate specifically for these products, but I think, you know, this must come down to the consumer proposition simply being so overwhelmingly appealing that people continue to use them despite the negative climate. And I think, you know, I think for those who are directly actively advocating, I think that's a real positive to bear in mind, you know. So even when it looks like the regulators are going to do their worst, you know, short of an outright ban, which I think is highly unlikely at EU level, you know, I think, you know, the market will actually adapt and survive.
Yeah, and I think, as you mentioned, I think the Commission will try everything to make it as strict as possible. Pretty sure they will start with a flavor ban, and then it's our fight from consumer point of view, but also from some sensible member states to avoid the worst things. And I was always like, because it's always hard to say, but I think the current TPD is actually quite good regulation, and it works pretty well as it is. So most likely everything else which comes after will be a bit worse. And that's why I was at the beginning always quite happy that they postponed the TPD update from year to year. But now I changed my opinion because I see what's happening in the member states. They start to regulating their things, and with regulating, a lot of them mean banning products. So I think overall, I think it might be actually positive that we finally get the update on TPD, and it's up to us to make it less bad as some of the commissioners want it to be.
That's right. And I think you're quite right there. I think a new TPD, it could fill what is perceived as sometimes a vacuum, that, you know, particularly where pouch is concerned. You know, there's no sort of comprehensive regulation of pouch at an EU level. A lot of countries have, you know, really rushed and stumbled in efforts to regulate it. I think sort of, you know, the ability to simply to say, well, okay, you know, we've looked at the issue of pouch Europe-wide, and here is a sensible, you know, risk minimizing way to regulate it. I think that in itself, you know, might reassure some of the policy concerns at a national level. You know, and I think, as you say, originally, that's probably very much what happened with the first TPD. You know, it was in effect saying, you know, okay, here are the, you know, the acceptable cautious criteria within which you can allow those products. And then everybody felt it was okay to go ahead with those.
Yeah, then let's hope for the best. I already apologize to you off record. I'm a bit low energy today because after 4 days of COP covering, I'm completely done and will fall into bed right now. I assume you feel quite similar. So thank you very much for joining us at that late hour as well. And thank you for doing the MEP survey, because we use that quite a lot and it's very helpful for us as consumers to understand who are those people who make the decisions. And I think the more knowledge we have about that, the better it is. So thanks again for that too. And I hope to have you back at some point again. And I'm pretty sure our listeners enjoyed that. We will link it in the description so everybody can find the survey results directly. It's also not behind the paywall. So thanks for that too. And wish you a good evening.
Great. Well, thank you. And yeah, I'm sure we will find something to talk about in Europe next year. It won't surprise me.
For sure.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye.